person's least favorite journalist, and welcome to the first ever episode of Bubble Pop. This is a weekly show where we'll be breaking down the biggest headlines so you don't have to doom scroll. Then we'll dig deeper into something juicy that you should know about. Today we've got tech critic extraordinaire Paris Marks on the show to talk about Canada's burgeoning tech oligarchy. It's not just Elon, and it's not just the States. But first, the news. A lot happened this week. Trump keeps threatening Canada with both tariffs and annexation. A Canadian tech darling powered Kanye's unhinged store, and I got the leaked texts about their decision to take it down. The Conservative Party is slipping in the polls, and the NDP had an internal memo leaked that warns of an early federal election. The Alberta Premier is being dogged with a scandal that has led to calls that she resign, and Trump is making everything awful globally, cozying up to Putin while throwing Ukraine under the bus and continuing his threats of ethnically cleansing Gaza. It's a lot, but let's dig in. Trump keeps lobbing new tariff threats Canada's way, whether it be the fresh steel and aluminum tariffs he's pledging to put in place, or the other 25% tariff on all Canadian exports to the US that were only paused for 30 days, which, if combined, could mean steel and aluminum tariffs of up to 50%. Canada's premiers and its federal finance minister went to Washington this week to try to talk sense into this administration over its nonsensical tariff decisions, because, to be clear, this will make tons of stuff, everything from a can of beer to a fancy car, even more expensive, especially for American consumers who will have the tariff costs passed on to them in the form of higher prices. While they were there, the premiers also made it clear to the Trump administration that Canada has zero intention of ever becoming the 51st state, prompting one U.S. official to publicly post that the Trump administration, quote, never agreed that Canada would not be the 51st state. Reassuring. This comes after Trump on Sunday doubled down on his promise to absorb Canada into the US. When a Fox News host asked him about Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau getting caught on a hot mic saying Trump's annexation threat is a quote, real thing, in response, Trump said this.
That your wish for Canada to be the 51st state is a quote, real thing. Is it a real thing?
Yeah, it is. I think Canada would be much better off being a 51st state.
Yeah. Anyways, while Trump was busy talking to Fox News and watching the Super Bowl, Kanye West bought regional ad space during the massively watched game. In that ad, he directed people to his Yeezy website, and it sold a single item, a t-shirt with a massive swastika on it. His store was powered by the Canadian e-commerce giant Shopify, who didn't immediately take it down. It wasn't until the next morning that the tech bros at Shopify finally removed it. And they said their team, responsible for enforcing the acceptable use policy, found it did in fact break their rules, but not, as you might think, because of the swastika. A Shopify source leaked me internal messages about their decision. In a Slack post, Shopify's general counsel, Jess Hertz, said Kanye's store was shut down because, quote, this wasn't real commerce. It was a stunt, not a good faith attempt to make money, which brought with it a real risk for fraud. But anyone who knows about Shopify leadership might not be so surprised that they handled this in this way. Later in today's episode, Paris Marks and I will dig deeper into Canada's very own Elon Musk-style tech broligarchs, so we can put a pin in that for now. Speaking of broligarchs, lots of them, including Musk, seem to be lining up behind Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre, who, it turns out, has had a tough few weeks. Polls show that the Conservatives have been bleeding support since Trudeau stepped down and Trump stepped up his threats against Canada. And one new Léger poll even suggested the Liberals would be tied with the Conservatives if they crowned Mark Carney as Trudeau's replacement. But overall, most polls suggest the Conservatives are still leading by a healthy margin and would win a majority if an election were held today. Though I will say, a lot of polling you see in the news these days are actually online polls, and those can't be assigned a margin of error, which is a good reason to take them with a massive grain of salt, because a small margin of error usually means it's a more trustworthy poll, whereas the bigger a margin of error is, the less confidence you can have in what the poll says. And again, online polls don't have a margin of error. Still, it is clear there's a lot of support behind the Conservatives right now, despite the fact that Pierre Poilievre won't stop emailing his supporters about eating bugs. But there is a good chance that he could be in the process of starting to blow it. And according to a leaked internal NDP memo, the New Democrats have been hearing a lot of rumors in Ottawa that if Mark Carney wins the Liberal leadership, he'll call a snap election right after. So if the NDP sources are to be believed, these polls could be put to the test very soon. Over in Alberta, their right-wing premier Danielle Smith is dealing with some troubles of her own. And I'm not talking about the fact that she keeps moving ahead with horrific anti-trans policies, despite the fact that studies have shown these will cause more kids to try to leave us. For the record, I emailed one of these studies, which was published in the very well-respected journal Nature, to her staff, and I requested her comment on it. They never replied, and they moved ahead with the policies after that. Anyways, when she's not busy meddling in trans kids' healthcare, one of her, at the time, top staffers is now alleged to have been meddling in the awarding of contracts by Alberta Health Services. Now, she claims she only became aware of these allegations of political interference and conflicts of interest through seeing them in the media. The Globe and Mail first reported on the corruption allegations, which were made by the former CEO of Alberta Health Services, Athana Mensalopoulos. In a letter from her lawyer, Mensalopoulos alleged AHS was pressured into approving private contracts, and the CEO was then fired just 2 days before meeting the Auditor General. In that meeting, she was going to discuss her concerns about private surgery facilities and procurement contracts. Mensalopoulos' lawyer said in the letter that throughout 2024, provincial officials pressured her to sign off on contracts for private surgical facilities, even though she was worried about how much was being paid and who was benefiting from them. And one of the people who pressured her, she alleged, was the Alberta Premier's chief of staff at the time. So, not great. The province's Auditor General is currently investigating these allegations, and Mensalopoulos is actually suing AHS and the province for wrongful dismissal. So this is all a very big deal, and it's still developing, so I'll keep you posted on it. Another thing that is a very big deal is the fact that Donald Trump had what he called a, quote, lengthy and highly productive phone call with Vladimir Putin this week. Trump made that call before calling Ukraine, a fact that President Volodymyr Zelensky called, quote, not pleasant, and prompting fears in Europe that Trump could make a dirty deal behind their backs. Meanwhile, former Fox News freak and current day US Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said NATO membership for Ukraine is something he does not believe is a realistic outcome, despite the fact that NATO officials have said Ukraine is still on a path to membership. Hegseth, a guy who has chugged champagne from a dunk tank on live TV, also said that it's an unrealistic objective to expect Ukraine to return to its pre-2014 borders, which basically suggests that he expects them to cede territory to Russia, which annexed Crimea in 2014. As if assisting one bid to annex territory wasn't enough, Trump has continued to say harrowing stuff about Gaza, suggesting he would, quote, take over Gaza, which would require the region to be ethnically cleansed of Palestinians. In that same Fox News interview from Sunday that I mentioned earlier, Trump said he would, quote, own Gaza, calling it a, quote, real estate development for the future. And when asked if Palestinians would have the right to return, Trump said, quote, no, they wouldn't. More than 350 rabbis, as well as Jewish creatives and activists, have signed an ad that was placed in the New York Times condemning Trump's ethnic cleansing proposal. Meanwhile, Trump has threatened that all hell is going to break out if Hamas doesn't release, quote, all remaining hostages this weekend. Hamas had postponed an upcoming swap of three hostages because they said Israel was still attacking Palestinians and denying both people and medical supplies from returning to the northern part of the strip. Trump responded to the news of this postponement by demanding the release of all remaining hostages by Saturday at 12 o'clock. That's 76 people, 44 of whom are believed to be alive. And when people asked what he meant by hell when he said that all hell was going to break out if Hamas did not meet his demands, he said Hamas will, quote, find out what I mean. Despite the chaos and confusion Trump's threats have caused, Israel has said it will stick to the ceasefire deal as long as Hamas releases three hostages as previously agreed. Although I will say there is evidence Israel hasn't been sticking to the deal either way. That's the week in news. I'll have another roundup for you next week so you can stay informed without the doom scrolling. After the break, Paris Marks joins us to dig into Canada's blooming tech broligarchy. There's a word people have been throwing around a lot lately. The tech broligarchy. Think Trump's inauguration, where he was flanked by billionaires from Google, Meta, Amazon, Twitter, instead of the usual politicians that would be standing in those spots. Think of Elon Musk in the Oval Office yammering on for almost 10 minutes while Trump sits there looking meek. Now, this might be the point where you go, okay, Rachel, sure, but that's the United States. We're a separate country. And to that, I say, for now. Sorry, that's not funny. But for real, there's a saying, when America sneezes, Canada catches a cold. And I regret to inform you, it looks like we might be coming down with a bad case of our own tech broligarchy. To help us understand this, I am thrilled to be joined by the host of the podcasts Tech Won't Save Us and System Crash. They're a tech critic, an author, a podcaster, and have a very, very big brain. Paris Marks, thank you for being here.
Absolutely. I'm so thrilled to be the first guest on your new podcast. I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. Yeah. How do you feel being the first one? It's a lot of pressure right on your shoulders.
No, not at all.
So I wanted to kick things off with an extremely basic question. I'm going to say a word to you, and I want you to tell me your gut reaction, what it evokes for you. Shopify.
Ugh. is that a good enough reaction?
Yeah. Tell me about that sound.
Oh my God. This company is like, it's interesting to me because I feel like during the pandemic, there was this moment where people were like, oh, we should be buying from Shopify and like these kinds of stores because like Amazon is like the big evil, you know, company and Shopify is like supporting the smaller stores and blah, 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 right? And like even then there were stories about how, you know, Shopify had some real issues there, but, you know, it was easier to like gloss over. And now, you know, and I guess it was the case then, but the executives at that company have just become so much more like explicitly right wing and pushing this like project that we're seeing the tech industry engage in the United States, but trying to make this a thing in Canada, pushing these really right wing narratives. And, you know, their platform also just hosts the worst stuff as well.
Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned this Buy Canadian push from the pandemic. We're kind of seeing that again, right? With the issues with the States, people want to support Canadian and you're hearing the name Shopify a lot. So Paris, can you tell me, just for the audience members who might not know, what Shopify actually does?
Yeah. So Shopify is basically a platform that people can build their own shops on, right? So, you know, you might not ever know that a small shop that you know, visit when you are shopping for things online is hosted by Shopify because they can look many different ways. You know, you can customize the appearance of it. But Shopify is like the, you know, technological platform that, you know, makes it all work, right? And makes it easy for people to sell things online without having to go through Amazon. And of course, they would take a cut of the sales and they charge like a monthly fee in order to run your store through this platform. But, you know, they kind of position themselves as like supporting the small businesses and, you know, entrepreneurs and all this stuff who are starting their stores, trying to start a business, like all this, you know, this is like the narrative that you hear from them. So yeah, that's generally the idea of what the company does, you know, and then some of those stores tend to be, you know, selling Nazi stuff and some of the worst right-wing things on the internet. But yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And that actually segues perfectly because I was about to explain that Canadians may have had their first brush with Shopify. They might not have necessarily recognized it until this week. It was in the news a lot because it was revealed that they were powering Kanye's Yeezy store, which sold one item. What was that item, Paris?
Oh, it was a beautiful white t-shirt with a black logo on it. It might be one that you've seen before, associated with the Nazi party and Adolf Hitler, the swastika. And it had the title HH-01. And you might know what the HH refers to there.
I think we can make a guess.
I think Elon Musk did kind of an action that you know, nodded to something similar quite recently. Yeah.
So, you know, for you and me, this wasn't a huge surprise given what we know about Shopify. You know, they don't seem super discerning about the stores that they power. They power Alex Jones's store. They powered the Libs of TikTok store, which, if you don't know, is an anti-LGBTQ hate account that sold stuff with grooming allegations on it. When they shut down Kanye's Yeezy store, They only did it because, according to leaked internal messages that I got my hands on, it was, quote, not a good faith attempt to make money. Paris,
I love that. Yeah. It's so funny. It's like, okay, you know, everyone is paying attention to the fact that Kanye West, you know, is tweeting, I'm a Nazi, and all this like anti-Semitic bile, and, you know, puts this ad on the Super Bowl to direct people to his website where he's selling a literal swastika t-shirt. And the company's response after, you know, silence for a little while is to take it down. And people are like, oh, maybe they finally have a problem with Nazi stuff now. You know, maybe they're going to start taking down these Nazi stores. And they were very quick to let people know, no, it's not because of the swastika. It's not because of the Nazi imagery. It's just because we didn't think he was actually going to fulfill those Nazi t-shirts to the customers.
And it makes sense because they have other Nazi memorabilia that they power from other stores. So, you know, they would have to take all of that down if they set that precedent, right?
Totally. You know, if you want your Nazi stuff, don't buy it from the Yeezy store. Go to all these other vendors on Shopify.
Exactly. So, Paris, you wrote a fantastic article for The Breach in December titled Pierre Poilievre is Cozying Up to Canada's Far-Right Oligarchs. And that explained how, just like their Silicon Valley counterparts, some Canadian tech billionaires are trying to push Canada to the right. So, you know, we just laid out these guys' sort of vibe and their ethos within their company. But can you tell me a little bit about when you first started picking up on the interest from Silicon Valley types in politics and that it was happening in Canada too? What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So down south, you know, in the States, I've been paying attention to that for quite a long time, right? And I think it's fair to say that I tend to focus a lot more on what happens in the US than what happens on Canada, though because of recent developments, I've been paying a lot more attention to Canada too, because of, you know, the threats that our political system is facing. And so in the States, you know, you have people like Pierre Thiel who have been promoting these ideas for literally decades, right? And even through the period of time where Silicon Valley was seen as more liberal or more progressive. People like Peter Thiel and a lot of people in his orbit, you know, Peter Thiel is one of the people who co-founded PayPal. He co-runs a company or co-founded a company called Palantir, which does a lot of work with like intelligence agencies and surveillance and things like that. You know, he also is a major investor who has invested in Facebook and, you know, these other companies that you will know about, right? But he has a very conservative, a very right-wing ideology. He has said that women should not have the right to vote. You know, he doesn't believe in the rights of minorities. He doesn't believe in democracy. You know, more recently, he has been echoing the ideas of a really crazy guy named Curtis Yarvin that like the United States needs a monarchy, but that monarchy will be like a CEO president. You know, the types of things that we're maybe starting to see happen. So yeah. These things have been happening in the States for a while, right? And we've seen the support for those sorts of ideas within, you know, people in the tech industry grow immensely over the past number of years because they started to feel their power being threatened, right? As the Biden administration moved forward with antitrust investigations and regulations on the tech industry and potentially higher taxes, you know, these people were not very happy about that. And so now you have seen them cozy up to the Trump administration and you see, you know, Elon Musk being virtually like the shadow president down there. And it's no surprise then that, you know, tech billionaires and tech CEOs in other parts of the world are going to be looking to replicate that kind of a project to protect their own power. We have certainly seen billionaires in the US, like Elon Musk, start to interfere in the politics of other countries. He's been talking a lot about Germany and supporting the AfD, which is a neo-Nazi party over there, the Reform Party in the UK. He said things about Pierre Poilievre in Canada. And those sorts of things would like get media attention, right? Look, this very powerful, prominent billionaire in the United States is saying these things about whatever country. But then when, you know, the tech CEOs in our own country were saying things about local politics and trying to start to engage in local issues, often that was not picked up on nearly as much. And belatedly, I feel like the media is starting to pay attention to those things. And so when I wrote that piece, you know, obviously I had been picking up on things that I was seeing, but I was also pulling from work from people like you or Luke LeBrun at Press Progress, you know, who had been paying attention to this as well, right? And so, you know, it's nice to see the mainstream folks really start to be picking up on it a bit more. But I think, you know, people like me and you were seeing this a bit earlier.
Yeah. It's better late than never, I guess, right?
Totally. Yeah.
So since you wrote that article, we actually saw something more organized emerge from these broligarch types. Sort of the Shopify guys are very deeply involved with this. It's called Build Canada. So can you tell me what this is?
Oh my God. So if I remember correctly, it's kind of like it originated as like a chat group, you know, Logic, this publication has reported on that, where, you know, basically these tech CEOs and founders and stuff were getting together to discuss politics, basically. And, you know, it has turned into kind of like, you know, they want to present themselves as not a lobby group, but it's kind of like a front for their opinions as they try to influence the public discourse and say, like, us as tech CEOs want to see these particular policy measures in Canada, and this is what needs to happen in order to like promote the tech industry in Canada and to have like a vibrant, innovative economy and all this kind of stuff. But also like to, you know, defend our interests and to make sure that we are going to make more money at the end of all this, you know? And these are things that, sure, they are pitching to like any political party that wants to potentially take these ideas. But I think when you start to read through the list of what they're talking about, you can see very clearly that, you know, they're aiming this at more of a right-wing audience and that they do want to see a right-wing shift in Canadian politics because they have become disillusioned with the ruling Liberal Party.
Yeah, because they did used to, at least some of the Shopify guys, I guess not Kaz Najarian, which we could maybe get into in a minute, but, you know, some of the Shopify guys used to kind of pal around with the Liberals. So did it just follow a similar trajectory to what you described in the States?
I would say what we saw there was a few things, right? On the one hand, I think that a lot of these people did become somewhat radicalized through the pandemic. You know, we saw that with the tech billionaires in the United States, and I would not be surprised if we saw something similar with some of the folks up here in Canada as well. Because usually when we think of the government, it's like, oh, they need to investigate things forever, and it takes them months or years to actually like move a policy forward. And all of a sudden you saw them, you know, basically say, okay, we need to do these lockdowns, you need to stay home, you need to wear masks. And for people who have a more kind of libertarian political bent, like a lot of these people in the tech industry, that was really alarming to them, right? To see the authority that the government could wield in these moments of crisis. And then the other kind of development there is we did start to see some regulation of the tech industry and of US tech companies in particular by the Liberal government. So there was the news code where they were expecting Google and Meta to negotiate with news publishers in order to pay some of their digital ad revenue to news publications. They also move forward with regulations on streaming companies to make sure that they're showing a certain amount of Canadian content and they're funding a certain amount of Canadian content. So those sorts of things started to, you know, rile some of the tech industry as well. But I think the real big moment that shifted them a lot was last year when the Liberal government proposed to raise the capital gains tax inclusion rate. And so for people in the tech industry who make a lot of their money through stocks and through capital gains, they saw this as a real threat to their wealth and their ability to continue to accumulate wealth, right? And that seems to have really been a radicalizing moment that really kind of tore any last connection between a lot of the tech industry and the Liberal Party and pushed them into the camp of the conservatives. So I think that this was something that was already happening. You know, I think a number of these people embrace these ideas about like anti-wokeness and, you know, the kind of stuff that we're seeing within the tech industry in the United States and the culture wars within the United States. But that was the moment where it was like, oh, okay, our wealth and our ability to make a lot more money is now being threatened because we're going to be expected to pay more taxes. And so this is what really kind of pulled them further to the right.
Making the rich pay more taxes. Always a How radicalizing dare we? Moment. It's just, yeah. You know, it's so selfish of the government, honestly.
Totally.
You know, like, and just so you guys know, like, Toby Lutke, for example, is, I believe, worth $10 billion, according to Google. So, you know.
He's so poor. He like, care. How can he even pay his bills?
Can he even acquire? None of us can afford eggs, but especially not Toby, right? So, yeah, so, okay, I want to put on, this is the part where I do something very cringe. I am putting on my philosophy major who wears a suit to class, like, fit, right?
Okay.
So I am no longer Rachel. I am now the most annoying person you know. Why is this a problem? Just because they're rich, they're not allowed to have political opinions and be politically involved. Why should Canadians care about this?
it's a good question, philosophy major. Well, you know, we should care for many reasons, right? And I think a key example of that is what we see happening in the United States right now. You know, we can clearly see that the U.S. tech industry is really shaping government policy down there in a way that is designed to serve their interests above the interests of everybody else. And I think that that has just become more and more clear as the days have passed, and we've seen the types of things that Elon Musk and the Doge, you know, Department of Government Efficiency have really been targeting and trying to dismantle in the United States. And not to mention, along with that, deporting migrants to Guantanamo Bay, changing policies in the Department of Education around trans people and basically kind of erasing their existence, like all these sorts of things, right? And not to mention the fact that, you know, this tariff regime and these other policies that they're putting in are going to raise prices and make life much more difficult for the average American, not to mention the average Canadian and Mexican as well. And we'll see who else they end up hitting with these things. So I think when we look at what the Canadian tech billionaires are doing, we can see that they agree with a lot of what we see in the United States, right? They might not always be as explicit, but if you look at like the Twitter feed of someone like Toby Lutke, you can see that he is embracing a lot of not just the kind of economic agenda that some of these things would be associated with, but also the cultural agenda, right? This opposition to wokeness, this preoccupation with immigration and migrants in particular, being fed up with like DEI policies and expecting companies to, you know, consider diversity and the diversity of their workforces. Obviously, the kind of ongoing anger and frustration there has been at Shopify for hosting Nazi stores and you know, other kind of vendors that sell merchandise that promotes hate speech. So all of these things they want to see go away. And they also want to make sure that there's a government that is going to not regulate them, not hold them to account, is possibly going to deregulate and cut their taxes even further. You know, they want to see this agenda that is moving forward in the United States come to Canada. And they are now, you know, increasingly trying to use their power and influence to, you know, further support the Conservative Party that is still, you know, leading in the polls at the moment. We've seen some shifts lately, but, you know, Pierre Poilievre, I think, is still favored to be the next prime minister, as scary as that is to say.
And, you know, it's interesting, something that Paris pointed out to me before we started this interview today was that Pierre Poilievre actually kind of gave them the advice to more or less start the Build Canada thing that they ended up launching. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like this is something that people maybe didn't notice or kind of forgot that happened. But May of last year, Pierre Poilievre spoke at the Vancouver Board of Trade, I believe it was. And he was basically saying that companies needed to get rid of their lobbyists that, you know, are constantly trying to get the government to do different things and actually need to take their message to the public if they are going to want a future conservative government to, you know, implement policies that are aligned with their corporate interests, right? That it's not just convincing the government that this is something that they should do, but you need to get Canadians on side. And the thing about you know, messaging like that is that it's clearly beneficial to the Conservative Party to say something like that, right? Because you're basically telling corporate Canada and CEOs that if they want to gain favor with what looks like a future Conservative government, because Pierre Poilievre has been leading in the polls for over a year and had like a substantial lead at that, that what they need to do is not just, you know, hire some lobbyists and have them go talk to Liberal Party ministers or whatever. But to get out into the public, to, you know, start posting on social media, to go into mainstream media organizations and to say, these are the policies I want to see. This is why I oppose the existing Liberal government. You know, these are the types of things that are going to benefit our business, but should also benefit Canadians. And so, you know, I feel that you can look at Shopify earlier and see that they were already trying to do things like this, right? It, and by earlier, I mean like late last year, mid last year, they were already starting to be more vocal about the politics that these executives supported. But now with this Build Canada campaign and organization that they have put together, you can see much more clearly that the tech industry and these, you know, kind of more right-wing aligned tech CEOs and founders are really coming together to try to take that message to the public in a more concerted way to say, not just this is what we want to see, but this is how we will build a better tech industry that will benefit all Canadians because we need an innovative and productive economy and blah, 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 right? And whether their policy prescriptions will actually deliver that, you know, is one question. But the other piece of it is that they are obviously benefiting the Conservative Party by doing this.
Yeah. And, you know, on that Build Canada website, you can literally see they lay out the exact legislative changes that would need to be made to achieve the things that they lay out. So, for example, there's one memo. They publish these memos every week and various CEOs and executives say whether or not they support that particular week's memo. And one of them that was supported by Toby from Shopify was about immigration. And one of the changes that it proposed making to legislation was subjecting any spouses or dependents of immigrants to a point system. So, I mean, dependents, wouldn't that mean kids? Like, it's just, it seems quite extreme. So that actually segues well to another thing I wanted to ask you about that you just touched on in one of your previous answers. How similar ideologically would you say these guys really are to Elon Musk? I mean, he's pretty far gone. And I guess I wanted to ask you, do you have any reason to believe, or have you seen anything in their social media postings and things like that, that give you a reason to believe they might have similar ambitions to what Elon is doing with Doge and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think they would like to see it. I think it's much less likely that something like that happens in Canada just because the political system works in a very different way, right? You can't really pull in someone like an Elon Musk in the Canadian system, or it would be much more difficult to do that to like run a department or something like that, right? Just because the parliamentary system is set up differently than the presidential system that the United States has. So I think it's far less likely that, you know, there is actually a Doge in Canada in the way that it exists in the United States. But there's the possibility still to set up some kind of structure or organization within the Canadian government that could do something similar to a Doge without having, you know, an Elon Musk figure lead it, but still having some kind of really radicalized Conservative Party MP who can do something similar and still be engaging with these folks. In terms of like the ideology of these people, I do think you see increasing similarities between what they are saying and what you're seeing from people like Elon Musk. And, you know, I think it doesn't make sense really to generalize here because there will be very different views within different tech CEOs. And I can't say that I am like following the tweets or whatnot of a ton of tech CEOs within Canada. But I think that when you look at the leadership of Shopify in particular and Toby Lutke specifically, that you do see a lot of retweets and a lot of posts that are echoing the types of things that Elon Musk is posting about. I think that we see, you know, people like Toby Lutke in particular being quite aligned with the project that Elon Musk is laying out. They might not be as vocal because I think it would be more difficult to do that within the Canadian system, right? You know, there's not as many people who are open to that kind of really radical political program up here than there are in the United States. And I would say the number of people who are is shrinking as we see what's happening in the United States. But I think that we should be worried about how radicalized and how powerful some of the tech CEOs in Canada have become, especially those at Shopify, which is one of the largest publicly traded companies in the country.
Yeah, I think something I always come back to when I think about Shopify is the fact that its COO, Kaz Najarian, co-founded True North, which is like, in my opinion, a right-wing rag. You know, they platformed Gavin McInnes, who founded the Proud Boys, which are now a designated terrorist entity. And they did that, like, just last year, I think.
And they were already designated a terrorist entity at the time they invited him on.
Exactly. And, like, they ended up taking down that particular interview. But there's all kinds of, like, really anti-immigrant coverage, really, you know, one of their personalities, Harrison Faulkner, has been extremely vocal on Twitter. And I actually caught him before they started hiding likes. He was liking posts from members of Diagolon, the far-right extremist group, and posts that had what I would describe as a racial slur for Indians in them. And, you know, it was just, like, really gnarly stuff.
He just needs to learn you need to start saying DEI now instead of the slurs, and then it becomes acceptable.
Yeah, that seems to be the what they're doing with that, eh? You mentioned this already, and I think it's really important to add to this conversation that we do have slightly more safeguards in place than the US. I mean, they have the Citizens United decision that totally unleashed political spending. So we have more rules around how much money there can be in politics. So there are certain safeguards that can help us to not experience the same broligarchy to the same degree, at least, as the United States. But, you know, what advice would you have for average Canadians who don't like the sound of what these tech leaders are up to and want to do something about it?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's a bit difficult, right? Like, one of the good things in the Canadian political system is that we do have these limits on the amount of money that can actually be donated to political parties and candidates. So, you know, a big corporation or a billionaire like Toby Lutke can't just go drop, like, hundreds of millions of dollars on a political campaign or something like that to try to buy the government, right? So, you know, in terms of regular Canadians, you know, you can obviously be involved in, like, the political process and you know, try to campaign against the types of candidates who would, you know, bring something like this in. I think even more than that, you know, you can get involved in groups that are doing this kind of work that are not just, like, during the time of a political campaign or something. But I would say even more generally, I think, is just to continue to be aware of what the tech industry is doing in Canada. And I feel like, you know, we have a lot of awareness of what happens down in the United States and what the tech billionaires down there are doing. But what happens up here in Canada can often be neglected, or we might not notice it nearly as much because it isn't as, you know, it doesn't, like, stand out as much. You know, it's not as... I feel like the United States is, like, you know, this celebrity reporting, like, reality TV, like, it's hard not to pay attention to it. But up in Canada, it's like things are more, you know, boring and, you know, it's not going to, like, attract your attention nearly as much. But I think with what's happening right now, we need to be paying more attention. Hopefully that means the media is going to start covering this a bit more and paying attention to what these people are actually doing and not being so scared to actually call out, you know, the types of things that they're up to and the political associations that these people have, right? Because we can see that the political media is often scared to talk about what Pierre Poilievre is actually doing and saying, to try to say that, oh, he's not as bad as, like, a Donald Trump or something like that, even when he's frequently echoing and posting about conspiracy theories, you know, really right-wing conspiracy theories, you know, talking about how the communists were, how the Nazis were actually socialists, to say that they're actually left-wing. Like, the types of things that total nut jobs tend to say are the types of things that Pierre Poilievre will actually tweet about, right? But those things the political media will not talk about because they don't want to piss off the Conservative Party more than they already do. Like, it makes no sense to me. But anyway, yeah, I would say pay attention to what they're doing. And, you know, if you want to participate in the political process, you can do that too.
And listen to Paris's podcast.
or that, you
all
know.
Over this stuff. So Paris, that's pretty much all the questions I had for you. Was there anything that we didn't touch on that you think is important for people to know who might be listening? If not, that's fine. But if you have any closing thoughts, I want to give you the floor.
Thanks so much. Yeah, no, it was really great to be the first guest on your new show. You know, I hope it does super well. And unfortunately, I think there's going to be a lot happening in the next little while that we're going to want to hear from you on. So yeah, you know, no extra thoughts on the broligarchy. You know, I think we covered that quite effectively, but really excited to see what happens with the show. And I wish you the best of luck.
Oh, that's so nice, Paris. Thank you so much. And could you please take this opportunity to plug everything? Where can people find you? Where can they listen to you? Advertise yourself.
Too many places. You know, I have two podcasts, Tech Won't Save Us and System Crash. I write a newsletter called Disconnect that you can find. And these days, when it comes to social media, I'm usually posting on Blue Sky. You know, I don't do the nice TikToks like you. Maybe someday, but we'll see.
Well, Paris, thank you so much for being my first ever guest. I am so honored that you agreed to do this. And folks, go check out Paris's stuff. They are incredible. Paris, thank you again.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for tuning into the first ever episode of Bubble Pop. I'm Rachel Gilmore, your least favorite person's least favorite journalist. And if you enjoyed this episode, consider subscribing to Bubble Pop on YouTube, Patreon, Substack, and wherever you like to listen. You can also find me on TikTok, Instagram, Twitch, and Blue Sky. I'd like to say a special thank you to Hans Vivian Wenzel for making the incredibly groovy music for Bubble Pop. You can find more of his stuff on Spotify under the artist name Hans, lowercase h with an exclamation mark. Thanks again for spending this time with me. Doing this is a dream job, and I could not do it without you. So thank you, and I'll see you next time.